Hello and welcome to Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi?
Sci-Fi.
Yes, Sci-Fi, 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 a podcast in which three random guys read science fiction and fantasy audiobooks and then tell you about them.
And it's awesome.
It is.
Damn it, drone, do my bidding.
So this week we are talking about The Player of Games by Ian M. Banks. This was one of my choices. Ian Banks is one of the greatest British authors of science fiction. One of his most popular series is The Culture, capital C, which details this particular utopian society. So from the back of the book, The Culture, a human-machine symbiotic society, has thrown up many great game players, and one of the greatest is Gerge. Jurnal Morat Gerge, the player of games, master of every board, computer, and strategy. Bored with success, Gerge travels to the Empire of Azad, cruel and incredibly wealthy, to try their fabulous game, a game so complex, so like life itself, that the winner becomes emperor. Mocked, blackmailed, almost murdered, Gerge accepts the game and with it the challenge of his life and very possibly his death.
That had no spoilers in it at all.
Well, none whatsoever.
I mean, it has a bunch of spoilers for a book that doesn't entirely exist.
Yeah, it's technically accurate.
All right. Barry, what did you think?
It was all right. I mean, it kind of stretched my, I don't know, like it's like a sort of like a plastic sheet of, you know, disbelief. And it almost punctured it.
Okay.
It was a little hard to have my suspension of disbelief, you know, remain active for most of this book.
Okay. We can talk a little bit about that in the spoiler section.
Spoiler section, yeah.
Okay. Kevin?
I actually liked it quite a bit. It was quite a bit better than the other book we read from The Culture or About the Culture or whatever. But, you know, there were a couple parts that were towards the beginning that really pissed me off. But then I realized that's because I was actually sort of invested in the book. So, so yeah, I liked it. Based on this book, I do, you know, it's like, sure, I'd like to be in The Culture. God damn it.
Would be nice. Yeah, this was already a bit of a favorite of mine. The Culture is sort of unique because it's kind of a working utopia. It's part of the reason why almost all of his books involve special circumstances, this sort of dirty tricks CIA type group that has to leave the perfect society, The Culture, and head out to other less civilized areas, or else it would just be, you know, 500 pages of, and then I just sat around today and it was awesome.
I decided to have another gender change.
Right. I'd switched genders and I wanted something done and then a drone did it. And that was also awesome.
So what year was this book written?
In the 80s, 1985
or 86.
Yeah, something like that.
Because I was thinking how probably at the time, a lot of the gender changing stuff probably would have been sort of controversial, you know, at least some degree. And like, I realized at some point, I didn't even really notice it as right. a thing until like towards the end when they mentioned a few things that probably didn't, you know, hit some of my comfort zones. And I was like, you know, it's like, you know, like having your gender change, just like some people do, like go on cruises or whatever.
I think it was much more prevalent in the first book we read.
Yeah, I think another thing that it's pulling from the headlines is in the 80s, there was a lot of emphasis on chess and the parallels between chess and the Cold War because so many of the chess masters were Russians. So I see a lot of parallels there.
Yeah, yeah. And yeah, that's one thing I really did like about this game was I don't know how accurate it is. You know, it kind of described how I imagine like master chess players to be like, where they talk about seeing beyond the board kind of, and not just like these pieces, but kind of seeing this dialogue happening and stuff like that. Or like, you know, kind of, you know, he's like talking about how horrible of a day he's having. And then suddenly he's like, oh, but I saw this way I could, you know, get out of it. And, you know, so, I mean, I guess, you know, if you didn't hate it, you know, it would be like, you know, there's actually like drama in like playing something like chess or whatever, you know, the way he described it anyway.
Yes. I believe that in reference to the game of Azad, it's entirely accurate.
Yes, I think you're right.
All right. Well, I think it's time for us to play the greatest game of all.
The game of life?
The game of our discussion section. The game where no one can really win. Except maybe you, the listener.
I was going to say, except for maybe our listeners.
Maybe.
Probably not.
All right.
You all have made horrible life decisions.
You heard it here first. We shall return, for we are Sci-Fi.
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 And welcome back to Sci-Fi, Sci-Fi, Sci-Fi. This is our spoilery discussion section, where we will tell you that in the end, the house always wins. This, in this case, the house being this, I don't know, super intelligent house with drones in it and stuff.
I want that house.
Where are my drones?
Well, I don't know. You might have, like, one that does the vacuuming.
Yeah, I used to have one of those.
Yeah, no. Don't have a Roomba. Sorry.
Right. So anyway, as usual, we shall begin with discussing our favorite scenes. Do either of you have a favorite scene?
I have a favorite enough scene.
Yay.
Yeah, that's my job. I kind of liked how it talks about how he kind of gets more into the game and more into the game, where, and it kind of takes over his life and, you know, his old mental processes. And so at one point, you know, where he's doing much better than they expected him to do and not just getting kicked out in the first couple games.
Right.
And he's sort of, you know, working his way up the ladder and towards the, you know, towards the end. I don't think he'd gotten to the fire planet yet. And he's walking along and he just suddenly, he's like, and then he saw this move, like, you know, it said like a ghost piece in a forest that was hiding or something like that hadn't been revealed. And he's like, takes one more step and he's like, I wouldn't want to put a piece in that area. That would be dangerous to risk it. And then he takes on the half step and he's like, and then he realized he was the piece he was trying to save. And then he realizes there was going to be an attack and he kind of like mentally frames it completely in the context of the game. And so he does this like rolling dive. And then at the same time, you know, what was even on top of that was not just that he saved himself from the assassination attempt, but that he said, and then he was pleased to realize that that was like the perfect in-game move. That was the closest approximation you could do for that response to something that was going too fast to suddenly reverse course, is to, like, you know, do the certain move. And so he was not only like, you know, he saved himself. He's like, he was pleased that he made this like perfect in-game like analogy, basically.
Cool. Barry?
I think I'd have to pick the ultimate scene where they're having the final showdown on the game on the fire planet, and the wave of fire is coming by, and this is where the book really like goes into full tilt.
Right.
It was far more exciting at that point than a lot of the rest of the book. It's a very slow build up to that.
Right. I mean, the synopsis tend to do make it sound like a taut action thriller, when mostly it's kind of like the musical chess set in space.
Yeah.
Yeah, there's a definite cinematic ending.
It's very operatic in its ending.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the whole planet sort of has like this 6-year cycle or something, where the fire is like racing across the planet and all the plants are blooming because they've adapted to that environment, and animals are running away, and they've built like this giant castle there. And
right, with some moat to protect it. And
yeah, some sort of,
you know, we don't know this until later on, but the android or whatever has told the leader of this planet, who basically is going to lose this match, that if he loses the match, that the culture is going to come in and take over his whole planet. So he's like, I have an answer. Ha ha. And like, and so he's like, you know, he destroys the, you know, the aqueduct to prevent, you know, the water from saving the castle. And he basically like keeps all the shutters open, and like the guards massacre like the entire senior, you know, echelon of the thing. And he's like, this is my final move, Gergely.
Which is interesting, because it sort of shows how the culture is kind of using the game against them, because none of this is a strategically good move at all.
Right.
Yeah. If the culture is going to come in, then his best response would be to like hunker down with all of his guards and a bunch of guns aimed at the sky. Wouldn't probably help very much, since the culture has such a technological advantage. But these guys think so much in terms of the game of Azad that he just sort of thinks, I've lost. Now the game is real.
Well, they're definitely playing it like a Cold War thing, and not like coming in and attacking like, well, we could, but, you know, wouldn't be very popular. So let's just try this instead.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it kind of reminded me a bit of how I imagine like sort of like the Vulcans like view manipulating other races. Like when they first started, you know, discovering humans, right? They're like, well, we'll just kind of slow them down with, you know, their warp drive research and keep them kind of under our thumb a little bit, but not really. And
wait for them to mature a bit.
Yeah.
So the Vulcans are actually behind everything. This is your Star Trek conspiracy theory.
Well, we do live in a Star Trek universe, right?
Yeah.
If only. Computer freeze program.
Arch. Damn it.
I still don't remember that password.
Yeah. You have to say all the digits of pi.
It's that last one that always eludes me.
You use base pi, then it's one.
That is a very good point.
Is it? Anyway.
Don't you dare cut that.
I don't think I'll have time to cut anything. So where was I? Oh, yes. So my favorite scene is the final twist at the end. And I have
wasn't a surprise, though.
Not really, no. I remember the first time that I read this. Initially, Gergay is blackmailed by this one drone, and then he's assisted on the mission by this other drone. And it's revealed that that second drone was, you know, actually sort of like wearing a drone disguise. I mean, a floating right. robot in disguise, but whatever. And I remember getting to the end of the book and thinking, well, what I thought was the end of the book, and thinking, oh, well, that was all really cool, but, you know, it would have been a really cool twist if they had revealed that those two drones were the same drone. And then I got back to it probably months later, just sort of picked it up and started reading it again, and then I realized that what I had taken for, like, the publishing information or God knows what, maybe I thought it was an index to the book or something like that, was, in fact, like, this last little subchapter, which was this letter from that drone that reveals that, oh, yes, and, yeah, I was that other drone, too.
Yeah, clever.
I got to that part of the book. It was sort of like walk into the room and all your friends are there and it's your birthday and they all say, surprise. Huh, didn't see that one coming.
Yeah, I guess that it might be, but I didn't know for sure. And he did kind of touch on that in the book too, where he was sort of like, well, you know, some of you readers might have guessed by now, you know, right. But you feel good about figuring it out yourself or something like that.
Yeah. All right. So there was no T in the book. I actually did a search and checked. The letters TEA do not appear.
That's surprising that I didn't like it more then.
Yeah.
Let's see. However, they do have, Gergay does have these drugs that he can gland.
Oh, yeah. So like the culture, basically, they've messed with their genome quite a bit over the years. So they have these, you know, it's like, oh, you want to get drunk. You just have to like, you know, think about drunk or whatever. And it activates some gland in your body that produces this chemical.
Right. Exactly. And there's this one drug that he uses called Sharp Blue, which nobody really uses because it doesn't actually give you any pleasure. It just sort of helps you think your way through that. So I decided that that was tea.
Sharp Blue. Well, he did say that, yeah, that was something that it took a bit of an effort, a mental effort to actually produce it.
Mm-hmm. Just like making tea.
Yep.
It requires work. I don't want to do it.
And then, yeah, it didn't make you high. It just made you think difficult problems were easy and impossible problems were just difficult, you know.
Mm-hmm. So, meth?
Well, I actually thought it was interesting because on this planet, they're supposed to be, I don't know. It seems sort of like they were saying this planet was basically our current level of technology, or maybe a little bit, I guess, beyond that, but not a lot beyond it. You know, well, they had space flight, but it was sort of like if we had space flight, but everything else was the same or something.
Hey, it's been at least 40 years since we went to the moon.
That's true. So we don't really have space flight anymore.
Yeah.
Right.
We routinely launch stuff into space.
Yeah, that's close enough.
Yes. And as Wikipedia points out, SpaceX has these automated ships, and they named a couple of them from the ships in this book because since all the ships are artificially intelligent, they're allowed to name themselves. And so usually they're fairly whimsical, like just read the instructions and of course I still love you.
Yeah, I was wondering where those names came from. I think I missed where those names came from. I didn't realize that they made them up themselves, which I guess makes sense.
Yeah, I guess something I didn't remember from the first book was, I remember the phrase special circumstances.
Right.
But I thought it was actually the name of a ship in the first book.
That would actually fit fairly well as the name of a ship.
And so then in this book, I finally realized that was actually like the group of people that are assigned the dirty work of going out to other planets. Right,
they're the CIA.
It's a very like euphemistic name. Special circumstances.
Right.
Like, oh, well, that's nice.
We normally don't stoop this low, but we do all the time.
Yeah.
Use of Weapons, the next book in the series, actually delves in a little more about special circumstances and how they operate and the different classes of drone that they use. One thing that I'm always a little bit interested in is, so now you've got AIs and they're manufactured beings. How is it that they're not slaves? I mean, I guess that this is just like a morally superior culture.
We don't need slaves because we don't, or something. Right,
because we make enough.
Well, they made at least allusions that there were sentient and non-sentient robots.
Right.
So I guess the non-sentient ones do the labor or something?
More or less.
Okay. So it's like just having a tractor that can steer itself or something like that, but it can't think, so it's okay.
Not all robots have their rights.
Right, because they're not real sentient robots. They're just...
It's because we didn't put them through factory A. They went to factory B. And
we have that dip switch turned off.
Right. Oh, no. We put a sticker on it that says, not conscious.
What happens if, what happens if the sticker gets accidentally removed?
Oh, then it's conscious.
Yep.
Oh,
so that better be a hell of a sticker.
Yeah, make sure those stickers with you. Frank, you're not conscious and you're not conscious.
It's actually something printed on a piece of, you know, industrial duct tape.
Nobody tell Kevin what's on his forehead.
Yeah. Hey, I always knew I was a replicant.
I'm going to pull it off right now real quick.
Yeah, I don't think he'd like that very much.
Yeah, I'll say one thing towards the beginning of the book that it kind of really irritated me was when he decided to cheat on that game to get the full whatever it was. And that was when I kind of realized I was like more invested in the book than I thought I was.
Yeah, that kind of annoyed me the first time through. But I mean, it is kind of in character for this guy, because the reason that they send him to the Empire of Azad is he's actually ethically kind of a little bit lower on the scale, at least when he starts out.
But it seemed like he had to at least be talked into it, right?
Oh, right.
And mostly because
he's just like, I'm happy here.
It took him at least 400 or 500 words to convince him.
Oh, right. But I mean, at first he's like, you're talking about cheating. That's horrible. And then, I mean, I got the impression when I reread that part that it seemed like maybe he was kind of getting blasé about everything.
Oh, absolutely.
And that was more why he did it, just to like, oh, well, I might as well, you know, do this thing too. You know, that's a little bit of a challenge, as opposed to like, you know, because he really wanted it. He just kind of was like bored more than anything.
Yeah.
Right.
I actually got kind of a little bit irritated with the same scene, but a little bit later, where, you know, now that he's cheated in the game, you know, now he's being blackmailed. Right. And he's sort of like, he's like not even incensed, but he's sort of like shocked at like someone would even blackmail
somebody
he's like, in this universe. And I'm like, dude, you play games all the time. This is just, you know, taking it to the next level.
Well, but he does live in a utopia.
But he was also saying that, well,
yeah, but I mean, still, I mean, it's like I was saying earlier, it kind of stretched my suspension of disbelief on that one, that, you know, blackmail wasn't sort of a common thing. And
but they did say that basically, like, oh, it was so common to be able to manipulate and create, you know, fake videos that blackmailing didn't happen because you couldn't really verify that it was real. That was like the main plot point, was that, oh,
right. But, you know,
we had one of the super brains in the ship, like, record it so that could prove that it's real somehow because it's higher fidelity or something.
Right. But I mean, traditionally blackmail, it's not about facts. It's about the insinuation and the illusion of, you know, smearing somebody.
Right. But it sounded like he was willing to, if he didn't think it had been recorded by the high fidelity recording, basically he was willing just to be like, whatever, he's making it up.
The 23K high def camera.
But it was funny too that he was like, when he first was doing the cheating, he's like, if you get caught, I'm just going to kill myself, brain death permanent and all this stuff. And which obviously didn't happen later on when he got blackmailed. But yeah, I was kind of thought that part was actually a little weird, because I'm like, I guess that was in the book because that was what was supposed to force him to go to the place. But it didn't seem like he really even needed that much of a push to apply or whatever. So
right. It may have been a bit overdone because, yeah, he was seriously bored.
Yeah.
They really were doing him a favor somewhat.
Well, it sort of sounds like somebody's like so at the top of their game, right, that they're just not interested in doing it anymore.
I mean, consider the very first game that he played, where he's just like, huh, yeah, and then I'll take this piece and I'll put it, I don't know, somewhere.
Randomly, yeah.
Where I'm not even going to look at where it is. And, you know, at first I thought this was going to show what an amazing game player that he was, but actually then he loses that game because he's just so blasé about it. And it's not a game that counts, but...
Right. It was the one in like 20,000 chance that his random piece ended up at like in his, you know, like the ping basically. And right. So he by default loses and he's just like, damn it. And...
Right. And if he had like looked at it...
Like, yeah, one turn before,
you know, oh, click, I win.
Yeah. And
this is somebody that enjoys winning. So he was actually becoming less of a good game player because he's so blasé about it.
And I think because he was so good that like he was playing against some student of a friend of his or whatever that was teaching somewhere. And it's like, oh, did you humiliate another one of my students? And he was basically like, eh, yeah, I guess, you know, it's their fault. They're not that good.
I hadn't really thought about it, but I suppose.
Yeah.
No, they were talking about his protege. Yay, actually.
I thought that was a different one, but yeah.
No, I think you're right. That may have been a different conversation where they were saying, I hear you like threw a drink at somebody and called them an idiot. And he was saying, yay, deserved it.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. So, I mean, it was kind of interesting when they go to the planet and the planet is supposed to be like, you know, they don't have all this technology. So they don't have this like, well, you just live forever and do whatever you want, whenever you want. And you could just, I mean, and they do kind of hint that that's not totally true. Like it was it Ye that wanted to do the floating cities and stuff like that or floating continents?
Right.
And, you know, it's like she had these ideas for these, like, you know, you just like magnetically charge these, you know, large land masses and then they just float around on this like magnetic core planet. It'd be awesome. And like, you know, it was, I'm like, oh, well that definitely looks like a lot of these old, you know, sci-fi fantasy artwork that I remember from the 70s and 80s.
Right.
And then it was
done in Age of Ultron.
Right. And then they're like, well, but these, you know, one of those super brains was like, well, that looks like it's kind of hard to do or there's reasons why we wouldn't do that. And she's just like, well, that's stupid. We should do it anyway. Like,
yes, she was also said, you know, he said, well, what if they collided? What if they did?
I know.
You guys don't understand about art.
Yeah. So they did kind of in kind of a silly way, but they could kind of highlight that. Well, you're not like, you don't become a god or something like that when you're in the culture. You just like have the potential to live a long time and do whatever you want most of the time.
Right. Gargay doesn't actually make a living by getting game endorsements or anything like that. He's just, you know, that's his life. He right. loves he just, playing he games. He does it.
He doesn't, you don't have to make a living in the culture. You just sort of, you want a house, you just go build one and like the robots go and build you one. And it's, you know, I guess what the culture is saving is too much energy use, I guess, whatever, but.
Right. They were saying at one point that the amount of energy that was being expended to bring Gergay to the Empire of Azad was a little bit out of normal. And, you know, they wouldn't have done it except for very good reason.
You mean special circumstances had a disproportionate response?
Generally.
Yeah. And I did like the fact that when they were on in the Empire of Azad, I don't remember if the planet was named that, but, you know, the guy's like, well, you know, what if I wanted, you know, like my own planet and all that stuff? Wouldn't that be, you know, like, you know, he's like, well, I guess you could have that, but why would you want a whole planet? He's like, well, let's just say I did. Was that the guy that was in that weird like mech armor that was in the prison armor? I forget.
Yeah, I think so. Basically, yeah. It was.
He had challenged the Emperor to a game with some sort of physical
right.
component, you know, to the loss and. So I guess he was, instead of being killed, he was,
they said that he would be imprisoned. That was what the bet was. And, but he figured that the Emperor would just sort of say, oh, never mind, because he was such a great military leader and so forth.
Which I guess is better than having, you know, your genitals burned out.
Yes. Yeah. Part of the game, of course, was that you could have, I forget what they called them, basically body bets, but
physical bets or whatever.
Now, physical consequences.
It wasn't a physical challenge where you'd have to like run an obstacle course or anything like that.
It was like, I bet my hand against your genitals or whatever like that. You know?
Right. And so, yeah, at one point, Gergay has to play against this guy and they've made a bet where whoever loses basically loses their genitals without anesthetic. And it's
permanently.
It's far worse for the other guy because Gergay's will just grow back.
Yeah.
Right. He's from the culture and is basically, you know, will heal up from anything. Whereas this guy, yeah, not only he basically loses his status as an apex. This is a three-sexed species. So they've got male, female, and apex, which functions in the middle, shall we say.
Yes.
So one thing that I thought was sort of interesting was how long had they been sort of grooming Gergay for this job? Because Marin Skell, the drone, had been on the planet for a while at least.
Yeah.
I think they were looking for somebody. I don't know if they were grooming him, or at least they claim that they weren't. Like, because he's like, well, did you like, he's like, how long have you known about this? You know, was I basically born and right. created to do this? And they're like, no.
I don't think he was born to do this. I think, you know, once he sort of showed some aptitude to games, they're like, well, we'll just keep an eye on this guy, you know, help him along a little bit. And you know, eventually he'll come in handy on this, you know, one weirdo planet where games decide everything.
Right. They said they were like looking for someone, quote, like him or something like that. And
so, yeah, I thought that this was a very well done book. And I thought it really had a lot of interesting things about how games and culture and language shape the way you see the world, especially because Gergay, like his protege was complaining that she didn't want to sleep with him, basically, even though she basically was free love and slept with everybody else. because he wanted to possess her.
As a game piece.
And that was unusual for somebody in the culture where there's no real point to possessions because you can have whatever you want.
Right. And he's like, oh, I should have been more flippant about it, I guess, or something.
Right. And then he goes to Azad and he is able to really understand the game so well because that's their baseline method of thinking. Everything is owned. Everyone is owned by somebody. It was sort of interesting because they said, oh, yes, you're going to a place where everything is a possession of someone. And it's just like, yeah, right. We've got that now. And everyone is probably a possession of someone. And, oh, okay, well, that sounds like a downright bad place. You know, even if they aren't, it isn't outright slavery, they're owned by, you know, economic or social means. Just like, oh, yeah, I guess that is a fair analogy to now.
Yeah, I felt that, you know, that was another scene that sort of made me feel like he was, you know, Gergay was a little bit more, at least to me, naive about things, is where he discovers that, you know, when he's playing against the Emperor, that the Emperor is playing as Azad, right? As the Azad culture would do,
right.
Versus, you know, where he kind of realizes like, oh, I'm playing as, you know, the culture, right? I'm like, well, yeah.
I got the feeling that he had sort of been doing that, but he hadn't really sort of taken that insight all the way until that point.
Well, I think that like right before then, remember he was kind of like, he didn't even care about winning. He kind of was a despondent. And then
They had already sort of had that agreement where, you know, even if he had won, they were still going to release this video of him losing, right? So no matter what, it's like it really didn't matter.
And he didn't care.
Yeah. He just wanted to play the game at that point.
Yeah. He finally wanted a game that was actually challenging and a player that was challenging because, in fact, like half of the games leading up to the final one, he was sort of like, but I thought that they got more out of the game. Like, you know, he was fighting those two like generals or whoever it was, the guy in the weird suit and like sort of his younger rival that were like kind of like the old school and the new school, you know, of the military commanders. And it was like a 3-player game and he just sort of sitting back while they like, you know, whack it out, you know, between them. And so he's like, you know, it was easy to win by just letting them destroy each other. And I just sort of like mopped up and put all the toys away after the kids were done playing with them and stuff, like it said. And he's sort of in the intermission, he's talking to the older guy in the robot suit. And he was just like, yeah, I thought about joining on one of the sides, but it looks like it's pretty personal. And he's like, I'm having the time of my life. And like, and
yeah, he was definitely the crazy element there.
But then like, after that game or the next one, I forget that he seems like he's losing the first day. I forget exactly when it was. And the robot sort of brings him up and he purposely will only talk in their cultural language.
Right, in Moraine.
Yeah. And you know, I guess that's a little bit of reference to whatever the theory of
Saper Whorf hypothesis.
Yeah, which isn't true apparently, but you know, it's a neat concept anyway, that you know, the language you speak in can affect your thoughts in some way or the way you form things, you know, kind of like newspeak or whatever.
Right.
And so you know, he seems like he's kind of in a rut. So somehow after like a day of talking in Moraine again, and it's like, you know, it's supposed to be like a more complicated language that you can, is like the perfect communication medium or something like that for sapiens. Like,
it's like Lojban, but something that somebody could actually speak.
So
Esperanto.
Yeah. Esperanto is designed to be actually, yes, more speakable. Lojban is supposed to be, you can express things so incredibly precisely that, you know, just coming up with, oh, I have this sentence in this language, you know, it's just like, oh, good work. You expressed it a sentence.
Yeah. It sort of sounds like those, you know, there are terms in other languages that are very hard to translate into English just because the translation expands into, you know, multiple sentences.
Right.
Right. I think Neal Stephenson had that fuck face was not something that could be translated from English to anything else.
Yes, that reminds me of the phrase that the drone says when they, you know, they have to like disguise Moraine when they're in the presence of the other people so they don't learn their language.
Right. Yes, the drone has to speak in this bizarre double talk of fiddly-dee, nonsense.
Yeah, where he's just like, you know, more nonsense work. You're really fucking pissing me off, fucker. Like, you know, and he kind of like is inserting that in between, like, and that was pretty funny, you know.
Well, is there anything else we have to say about The Player of Games?
Well, we have to do the what character and or group would you want to belong to, and or would you be?
Yes, I would want to be anybody. I mean, anybody within the culture would not want to be anybody special. Just, you know, sounds like the coolest vacation, and it could last the rest of my life.
And longer.
And longer. And I could just, you know, gland drugs all day if I wanted to.
Yeah, I think I'd have to agree with that. But, you know, I think if you guys were to pick a person for me in this book, it'd probably be that sort of insane game player that's stuck in the little robot prison.
That guy. that was kind
I'm
of
just
neat.
Gonna blow it up.
that was.
I think I would cast you as Marin Skell.
Oh, thank you.
Yeah, I think that's relatively accurate. Although it would be cool to be able to, you know, his, what was it? It wasn't Marin Skell. It was sort of like his friend that was also the android that ran his house or something. I was a little unclear, but it seemed like he was always helping out around
Chambliss.
Yeah. And, you know, at one point he said like he was over 4,000 years old and stuff like that. So you're like,
couldn't remember precisely when, and everybody knew that he knew exactly when.
Yeah. It's like, well, it wouldn't be bad to be basically an immortal drone of some kind. Although, you know, yeah, I think living in the culture probably would be the easy answer. I mean, even being, you know, Gergay would be awesome as far as like, you know, I've always thought it'd be awesome to be like really good at chess and stuff like that. But, you know, probably would get irritating.
But I mean, you know, I was like sort of thinking about it for a while. It's like, you know, they sort of live in this utopia with, you know, where they could do what they want and there's no laws, right? And, you know, if you did something that you really weren't supposed to do or was looked down upon, they'd just assign a drone following you around.
Slap drone.
Yeah.
Right.
And make sure you didn't do it again.
But, yeah.
You know, in some ways, like the special circumstances group is sort of like really in control of a lot of things.
Right. You know, one suspects that it's the minds that run the special circumstances.
Right.
And probably humans are being kind of kept around as pets at this point.
Yes. Right. They're like, well, we kind of owe it to them since they did make us, but, you know,
but once
whatever.
They're all dead... It's like, we're not going to make anymore.
Mm-hmm.
They're like the, you know, three Quatlus through the newcomer thing. Like, you know, the big brains that are, you know, controlling everything.
All right. Well, then I believe that the fire is coming over the horizon now.
We're going to board the RTFM and fly away.
It's definitely time. All right. Until next time, we have been Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi.
Sci-Fi.